Varna Ashramavati by followers of the institution of the four Varnas and the four Ashramas.
Bharati Bihi, of the land known as Bharat Varsha, India. Praja Bihi, who are the inhabitants. Bhagavat Proktabhyam, which was stated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sankhya, by the Sankhya Yoga system. The analytical study of material conditions. Yogabhyam, by practice of the yoga system. Bhagavat Anubhava Upavarnanam, which describes the process of God realization. Sarvarne, Antu Savarni Manu Upadekshyamana, instructing Paramabhakti Bhavena, in greatly ecstatic loving service to the Lord. Upasharati, serves the Lord. Idam, this. Cha, and. Abhigrinati, chants. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In his own book known as Narada Pancharatra, Bhagavan Narada has very vividly described how to work to achieve the ultimate goal of life, devotion, through knowledge and through execution of the mystic yoga system. He has also described the glories of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature to Savarni Manu in order to teach those inhabitants of Bharata Varsha who strictly follow the principles of Varnashram Dharma how to achieve the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, Narada Muni, along with the other inhabitants of Bharata Varsha, always engages in the service of Naranarayana, and he chants as follows. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has clearly declared Bharata Bhumite Haila Manushya Janmadyara Janma Sartaka Kari Kara Para Upakara. The real success or fulfillment of the mission of human life can be achieved in India, Bharata Varsha, because in Bharata Varsha, the purpose of life and the method for achieving success are evident. Srila Prabhupada wrote this probably 75. People should take advantage of the opportunity afforded by Bharata Varsha, and this is especially so for those who are following the principles of Varnashram Dharma. If we do not take to the principles of Varnashram Dharma by accepting the four social orders, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the four orders of spiritual life, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa, there can be no question of success in life. Unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, everything is now being lost. The inhabitants of Bharata Varsha are gradually becoming degraded, malechas, and yavanas. How will they teach others? So this was how many years ago? About 40 years ago. Prabhupada wrote this. I think it's gotten, what do you think, better or worse since then? Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement has been started not only for the inhabitants of Bharata Varsha, but for all the people of the world, as announced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is still time. I'm wondering exactly what Prabhupada means like that. Still time for India, or still time for the world. And if the inhabitants of Bharata Varsha, probably for India, there is still time for India 40 years ago. I don't know, is there still time for India today? A little bit. There is still time, and if the inhabitants of Bharata Varsha take this movement of Krishna consciousness seriously, the entire world will be saved from gliding down to a hellish condition. Now, this is the part of this purport that particularly interested me. The Krishna consciousness movement follows the process of Pancharatrika Vidhi and that of Bhagavata Vidhi simultaneously, so that people can take advantage of the movement and make their life successful. Translation again. In his own book known as Narada Pancharatra, Bhagavan Narada has very vividly described how to work to achieve the ultimate goal of life, devotion, through knowledge and through execution of the mystic yoga system. He has also described the glories of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great sage Narada instructed the tenets of this transcendental literature to Savarni Manu in order to teach those inhabitants of Bharatavarsha who strictly followed the principles of Varnashram Dharma how to achieve the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, Narada Muni, along with the other inhabitants of Bharatavarsha, always engages in the service of Nara Narayan, and he chants as follows. So how does Narada serve Nara Narayan? How does the devotee serve the Lord? He finds suitable candidates, and then he instructs how they can achieve the supreme goal of life. So he finds suitable candidates, and he finds a suitable disciple to teach those candidates. So in this case, Narada is not teaching them directly. He's teaching them through a disciple, Savarni Manu. So he's taking, okay, who's got the ability to understand? And then those who have the ability to understand, those who have the ability to use, he gives them the highest thing. He goes to those people who are in Bharatvarsha, who are following Varnashram, and he gives them Sankhya, and he gives them yoga. But you notice what he's really giving them. He's giving them Bhagavad Anubhava, and he's giving them Parama Bhakti Bhavena. He's not just giving them something ordinary. So he's taking people who have, one could say, material qualifications or pre-religious qualifications and giving them the real thing. So this is also what we should be doing for our own self. We see, you know, what can I have that I can use to achieve Parama Bhakti Bhava, to achieve Bhagavat Anubhava. So in this case, Narada is saying, oh, here's some people, they're in Bharatvarsha and they're following Varnashram. Ah, they can use this. How can they use this? They can use this by taking up Sankhya and Yoga. So this reminds me of Prabhupada talking about adding the one to the zeros. Yes. Because Varnashram by itself is really a bunch of zeros. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Ramananda Roy, it's external, yes? And Mahaprabhu is talking to Ramananda Roy, and he says, so what is the supreme goal of life? And Ramananda Roy, first thing he said, is following Varnashram. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that's external. Tell me something else. And then Ramananda Roy goes on from there. Then he says, well, then if you offer everything to Krishna, Yat Kiroshi Yat Ignasi. No, that's external. Tell me something else. And then Ramananda Roy says, if you give up your Varnashram, Sarva Dharma and Paricha Jama Mekam Sharanam Raja, then that's the supreme goal of life. And Mahaprabhu says, oh, that's external. Tell me something else. And then he says, well, Gyan, that is the supreme goal of life. Gyan Mishra Bhakti. No, that's external. Tell me something else. And then finally he said, Bhakti without Gyan, pure Bhakti. Prema Bhakti. Oh, yes, that is good. Now please tell me something more, but that is very nice. And then he says, Sakyaras, and he says, that is very nice, tell me something more. No, actually first he says, Shantaras. He says, Shantaras, Sakya. He says, first Shantaras, then Sakyaras. And when it's when he gets to Sakyaras that then Mahaprabhu says, that is Uttam. But anyway, the point is that when he says Varnashram, Mahaprabhu says, that's external. And Prabhupada says Varnashram is within the modes of material nature. So by itself, Varnashram is useless. Jarasandha was following Varnashram also. So in a Vedic society, many of the people following Varnashram, they're simply going to the heavenly planets. Or they're taking a good birth on this planet. They're staying within the cycle of birth and death. Yet, those who are following Varnashram are much better candidates for Bhakti Bhava, for Bhagavad Anubhava, than those who are not. So why is that? Because they're already pious. They're already following the Vedas. They have some idea of sacrifice. They're engaged in karma, whereas those not in Varnashram are generally in Vikarma. They have no idea of sacrifice. They have no idea of following the scriptures. And we see, practically speaking, that when we take people who are from a sinful background and try to give Bhagavad Bhakti, there's a tendency still to engage in sinful life. Yes, we see this. Just like I was recently in some unnamed place where I kept finding people who were living together without marriage. It got to be very embarrassing to ask them, how long have you been married? You know, so you go to some devotee's house and they're with somebody. Oh, how long have you been married? Well, we're not married. Oh, how long have you been living together? 5 years, you know. Oh, and you're worshiping three Shalagram Shilas. Oh, okay, very interesting. So this is the tendency, right? Whereas people trained in Varnashram, they're not going to do that kind of thing. It's not even going to occur to them to do that kind of thing. Because they have this sense, you're supposed to follow your duty, you're supposed to follow the Shastra. Therefore, for them, it's much easier. Of course, one can think of any kind of benefit. One doesn't have to think, well, I wasn't raised in India. Most of us here don't look like we were raised in India. We have few. Possibly. No? Were you raised in India? You were raised in India. Were you, either of you raised in India? No, just have the body, but you weren't raised in India. Were you raised in the culture? Somewhat. And of course, that's diminishing. So if you see Indians who are being raised, you know, the second generation, third generation out of India, it's diminishing. And practically speaking, as Prabhupada's saying, even in India, it's diminishing. You know, a lot of the aspects of Varnashram culture are gone. I mean, you find, we have to be frank, you find Malecha Navana cultures where the governments are less corrupt and the streets are cleaner and et cetera, than in India. So this is being lost. And very few people anymore can claim, well, I really have proper Varnashram culture. I mean, how many people, even in India, can make this kind of a claim? Not many. You know, even you find these people, we are Brahmanas. Why is your house filthy? You know, why is your bathroom filthy? Oh, we're Brahmanas. We can't clean the bathroom. You know? Actually, we had an incident in one school in India where one Western body devotee went in to train the teachers, and she was suggesting to one of the teachers, maybe after class, you and the students could clean the classroom. And the head of the school told her, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to come back here anymore. Because if you're going to speak like this to the teachers, they're going to quit. You didn't realize the teacher you were speaking to was from a Brahmin caste, and to suggest that she clean her own classroom, she was ready to quit the school. So, you know, we see that there, how many people are really following this Varnashram. But still, you know, we do have some zeros to which we can add Krishna. It's not that because we're not all South Indian Pukka Brahmanas. I mean, I know one devotee I'm working with who's doing some translations of Manashiksha. We hope to publish a bona fide Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha. So he's born in a Sarasvat Brahmin family. And as a child, he studied all of the Vedas. I mean, he was actually trained in the system of Varnashram. But most of us, we don't have those sort of opulences. But we have some opulences. Yes, everybody has some opulences. So I remember in Soho once, Bhakti Chuswami was giving a class about how we should combine the blind man and the lame man, how Prabhupada wanted to combine the spiritual culture of India with the materialistic know-how and opulence of the West. And when he was talking, first time since joining the Hare Krishna movement, that I thought, oh, I actually have some benefit by being born in America. There's some value to that. It was sort of a revelation to me. All the time I've been in the movement, I always thought it was all trash. But we all have something, right? First of all, we're all born close to the time of Mahaprabhu. That's a pretty good benefit, yes? And we all have some, most of us, I don't know all of us, but most of us have some piety in our upbringing, something. Maybe we weren't taught to be Brahmanas. Maybe we weren't memorizing the verses of the, you know, Rig Veda when we were 5 years old, like this other devotee. But we were taught something. I mean, my parents taught me that there was a God. They taught me in worship, and they taught me some idea of sacrifice and religion. So that's something. You know, when we joined the Hare Krishna movement, most of us, we consider that everything we had in the past was just rubbish. Yes, that's the fanatic. And you just take anything you had before you join the movement and you throw it in the rubbish bin. And you say, that's all Maya. And then after about 10 or 15 years, you all of a sudden consider, wait a minute, maybe I had something there. And you kind of go through the rubbish bin again and say, oh, I could use this in Krishna's service. So we have something in our training and culture, and that's valuable. Right? We had something, some asset, some talent. Prabhupada says that Krishna has given everyone something extraordinary, and to use that extraordinary talent in Krishna's service is successful life. So we all have something. I mean, if you're a human being, if that's minimum, that in and of itself is some benefit that you can use in Krishna's service. Then how do you add the one to it? So here, Narada Muni is doing it through philosophy and mystic yoga. He's adding philosophy and mystic yoga, Sankhya yoga. But not Sankhya and yoga to attain Brahman, or Sankhya and yoga to attain Paramatma, or Sankhya and yoga to go to the heavenly planets. But he's giving them Sankhya and yoga as bhakti. So apparently, we say only apparently would it be Sankhya and yoga. Narada Muni is not giving them Gyan Mishra Bhakti and Yoga Mishra Bhakti. So he's not giving them something polluted. How can we tell that? Because it says here, Parama Bhakti Bhava and Bhagavan Anubhava. He's giving them pure devotional service. But the specific method by which they're achieving pure devotional service is study of the Shastra and engaging in the process of mystic yoga. Now, the process that Srila Prabhupada's giving us is described at the end of this purport. So how we're going to add that one to our zeros, and then, you know, you can say, well, I've got a lot of zeros, but you stick a one in front of it and you're a rich person. So how are we going to add that one to our zeros? Prabhupada's talking about the Pancharatrika Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi. So I did a little bit. I didn't have enough time to do a whole lot of research because I just found out yesterday I was giving this class and I was traveling yesterday. But I did a little bit of research and I was sort of astonished by what I found. I don't know, somehow or other, I'd always assumed that I understood what Pancharatrika Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi meant. And I don't know what happened when I looked it up in these purports and I went, wow. So in today's purport, Prabhupada says that these should be followed simultaneously so our lives can become successful. And also Srila Prabhupada says that in a lecture he gave on Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.24.25 that Pancharatrika Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi should be followed together. So what are they? What Narada Muni gave, again, was study of philosophy and mystic yoga. And what Srila Prabhupada is giving us, which is also, of course, Pancharatrika is also from Narada Muni, is Pancharatrika and Bhagavat Vidhi, and they should be followed together. What are they? So I'd like to ask all of you before I tell you what I found in these purports that's going to, I think, just astonish you. So what do you think they are? What is Pancharatrika Vidhi? Yes?
Deity worship.
Deity worship, okay. And what is Bhagavat Vidhi?
Chanting the holy name.
Okay, that's true. And there's more. Anybody know more?
Hearing and chanting,
yes. Bhagavat Vidhi is hearing, chanting.
Study.
Well, study is also hearing.
Serving the spiritual master?
Doesn't look like it. It looks like that's in Pancharatrika Vidhi.
Preaching,
yes! Preaching is in which one?
Bhagavad.
Yes, Bhagavad Vidhi. Preaching is in Bhagavad Vidhi. Yes?
Hearing and reciting Srimad Bhagavatam.
Is in which?
Bhagavad
Vidhi. Any other? Where is Vandanam? No. Where is Sakyam? Pancharatrika Vidhi. Where is Atmanivedanam? Pancharatrika Vidhi, yes. Prabhupada is dividing in two places he does this. He does this in 4.27.24, and he does this on his lecture on 6.2.24.25, which he gave in 1971. He says, Bhagavad Vidhi is Shravanam Kirtanam, and Smaranam. Hearing, chanting, and remembering is in Bhagavat Vidhi, and Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam is in Panchatriki Vidhi. And because Padasevanam is, serving the Guru would be in Padasevanam, so that would be in Panchatriki Vidhi. Now, is that interesting? Okay, that's not all. Prabhupada says Bhagavat Vidhi is sufficient, but then he says Panchatriki Vidhi is necessary. So, of course, with the way we use the words necessary and sufficient in logic, so that doesn't quite work. And he says that Bhagavat Vidhi is sufficient, but Panchatriki Vidhi is necessary. And he says necessary to purify our polluted body and mind. Now, you want to know the most astonishing thing he says? He says that Panchatriki Vidhi is on the level of worshipping Lord Narayan, and Bhagavat Vidhi is on the level of worshipping Krishna, and Panchatriki Vidhi is in Vidhi Marg, and Bhagavat Vidhi is in Ragamarg. So what do you all think of that? So since I just read that this morning, I have not fully digested this. But I was like, wow, what is Srila Prabhupada saying? And what's interesting is where he says this, which is in the purport to 4, 24, 45, 46, Prabhupada is talking about how one has to do Vidhi Marg first. But in today's purport, he's talking about doing them simultaneously. Doing them simultaneously, and he puts preaching in Bhagavat Marg. So, is that interesting? Yes. Bhagavat is Ragamarg. Worship of Krishna in Ragamarg. And Panchatriki Vidhi is worship of Narayana in Vidhi Marg. Now, of course, we know that one can perform any of the nine processes of devotional service in either Vaidhi Marg or Ragamarg. That's a fact. One can offer prayers in Ragamarg. In fact, Rupa Goswami gives prayers in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that are in Ragamarg. One can certainly surrender everything in Ragamarg, and one can certainly hear and chant in Vaidhi Marg. One can hear and chant. It's not that those who are worshipping Narayana don't hear and chant about Narayana. Or remember Narayana. So some thoughts about why Srila Prabhupada has divided like this with Krishna and Narayana and Vidhi Marg and Ragamarg? Anybody have any thoughts? Yes. You can look it up yourself. It's in the purport. 4, 24, 45, 46. So any thoughts on what Srila Prabhupada means by this? Yes. Yes, of course, there is some Vaidhi Marg also in Dwarka. One can also worship Krishna in Vaidhi Marg.
But not in Vrindavan.
Not in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, there's only Ragamarg. But in Dwarka, some of the residents are in Ragamarg and some of them are in Vaidhi Marg.
So only through chanting
that. That's one possibility. Any other thoughts on this? Okay, Prabhupada's talking about in today's purport how the way that we're adding Krishna consciousness to our lives, the way we're making our lives successful right now in the Krishna consciousness movement. He says here, the Krishna consciousness movement follows the process of Panchatriki Vidhi and that of Bhagavat Vidhi simultaneously so that people can take advantage of the movement and make their lives successful. And Srila Prabhupada's defined, in today's purport, he doesn't define Panchatriki Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi. He just simply names them. So in looking for how he defines them, the way he defines them is by which processes of devotional service they encompass. So he's saying that Bhagavat Marg encompasses Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam. And Panchatriki Marg encompasses the others, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Padasevanam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. And then he further says that Bhagavat Marg is worship of Krishna and is in Rag Marg, and Panchatriki Marg is worship of Narayana as in, and is in Vaidhi Marg. But yet here he's saying in today's purport and in his lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2, 24, 25 in 1971, he says that both of them should be performed together. Any thoughts? Yes.
Because the one is to qualify us to become, to chant the holy name purely. So the one will yes. help us to ultimately perform the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, Prabhupada is describing that in his lecture, that the Panchatrikhi Marga is specifically needed to purify our polluted body and mind. And if we think of that in reference to today's verse, Narada Muni was giving Sankhya and yoga to those who already had a purified body and mind. And Prabhupada is saying we are purifying our mind primarily through the Panchatrikhi system so that we can attain to Ragmarg. But what is he talking about doing them simultaneously?
Well, the first part what she says, and simultaneously, because the first part purifies us, and the second, the rest, the Panchatrikhi, gives us a chance to exchange, to have a more personal exchange with the Lord.
Okay. Any other thoughts about simultaneously? Yes. Okay, well that's certainly related to Narada Muni teaching Sankhya with the mood of Parama Bhakti Bhava. That he's teaching knowledge but with the mood of attaining Bhava or Anubhava for Krishna. But what is Prabhupada talking about in our Krishna consciousness movement?
We worship the deity by kirtan, because of overlap.
Okay. We're worshiping the deity by kirtan, which is interesting. If you go to, say, South India, they don't do that. If you go to the temples in South India, they don't have temple rooms like this. You've been there, some of you? They have these little teeny, 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 tiny little temple rooms, and you have to stand in a queue for a long time, unless you pay a few extra rupees. And then you get to stand in a queue for a little bit less long time. And then you get to see the deity for a moment, you know. And then you're gone. And there's not really much kirtan. You know, there's some clanging. Bam, 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 bam. You know? But there's not much kirtan. See, yes, whereas our worship is with these big kirtan halls. And our worship is through kirtan. And we're worshiping also, I mean, we're worshiping Radha Gopinath by reading the Bhagavatam as well. Any other thoughts on how these go together are done simultaneously in our Krishna consciousness movement? Yes.
Srila Prabhupada also translates it to bhakti as non-devotional service. So, both are also
But how is it that we're doing Vidhi Marg and Rag Marg together and worshipping Narayan and Krishna together? Yes?
If preaching is part of Bhagavad Marg, so Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan opened the temple and the deities are preaching, it makes it feel
good. Oh, that's very nice. So in Vrindavan, the deities are also preaching. The deity worship is also preaching. Maybe the deities are also preaching. I'm sure that Gaur Nitai here are also preaching. Any other thoughts? I mean, when we're worshiping the deity, when we're doing Panchatrikhi Vidhi, are we trying to go to Vaikuntha?
No.
I mean, maybe somebody is. Maybe there's somebody in our Hare Krishna movement who wants to go to Vaikuntha. But is that our goal? Yes?
No, it's not. But because this is also performing the spiritual world's activities.
Oh, that's certainly true. But I was thinking more in terms of that our goal is Rag Marg, isn't it? Our goal is Krishna. Don't we want to be with Krishna in Vrindavan? Yes? At least we say we do. I mean, maybe some of us aren't yet wanting to be with Krishna in Vrindavan. So that mood should be there in our hearing and chanting and remembering, even though we're also worshipping the deity in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. We're worshipping the deity, but we're still saying there's Radha Gopinath. There's Lalita and Vishakha, although our worship is in that mood. So I understood it in that way, that our goal is Vrindavan. Our goal is to enter into Rag Marg. So although we may be simultaneously doing Vidhi Marg, it's not with the goal of staying in Vidhi Marg. That's not our purpose. Anyway, that was my beginning, it's something that I'd like to meditate on a little further, and if any of you have further insights on this, it's just, again, I just discovered this morning at 7 o'clock, so I went, wow, this is really interesting. Now, of course, adding this one to the zeros is something we need to do for ourselves, and it's something we also need to do for others. In today's verse, Narada Muni and his disciple, Savarni Manu, they're helping others to add a one to their zeros. So why don't we look at that one first? So when we see people, how do we see them? Do we see them as potential to be used in Krishna's service? What potential do they have that can be engaged in service? Or do we see them in terms of their problems and their insufficiencies and their difficulties? So how to see people? Narada Muni didn't see these people in Varsha performing Varnashram Dharma and just say, oh, look at these pious materialists, worthless. He said, oh, because they're pious, they're materially pious, therefore they have some asset that can be used in Krishna's service. Even we find Narada preaches to Prichini Barishat, who's a materialistic person. But he's thinking, well, at least he's pious, and he's born in a good family. So there's something there that I can take advantage of. And in fact, Narada Muni's expert at seeing the good in almost anybody. I mean, Narada Muni saw the good in Magrari the hunter. That's pretty interesting. He saw that Magrari the hunter had some sort of asset that could be used in Krishna's service. I mean, in fact, he said to him, just go sit on the bank, wasn't it the Ganga? Go sit on the bank of the Ganga and worship the Tulsi Devi. So he must have seen that Magrari had the capability of a lot of determination. That's not an instruction you could give to everybody. Just go sit at the bank of the Ganga and just worship Tulsi Devi and chant the holy name all the time. But he saw Magrari has the ability to do this, so he gave him that kind of instruction. With the sons of Daksha, he saw all these people, especially the second set of sons. It was quite interesting. All he said to them basically is, why don't you follow the path of your older brothers? So what did he see in them? What asset did he see in them? That they were very what? They were followers. They were obedient. They were going to do all these austerities just because their father told them to do it. So he thought, well, if they have this mood of just obeying authority, then just tell them, hey, just follow your older brothers. So when we're trying to engage people in Krishna consciousness, we should also see like that. What do they have? Instead of what do they not have? What do they have? What talents does this person have? What inclinations do they have? You know, book distributors do this quite a bit. You talk to people and you try to figure out what they have that you can then connect to the book. Oh, you're interested in that? You're interested in art? Oh, look at all these paintings. Oh, you're interested in psychology? You know, we try to pick up something. We don't just look at them and say, you know, you're just a hog, dog, camel, and ass. I don't think you'd be particularly interested in this book. So something that one could connect. And one should do that for oneself also. One should see, what do I have? What extraordinary talents has Krishna given me? What do I have in my background? Not what do I not have? You know, not what am I lacking? We're all lacking. Everybody's lacking so many things. But what do I have? What can I use? Is there something from my upbringing I can use? Is there something from my cultural background I can use? Is there some kind of talent or ability I can use? Is there some kind of inclination that I can use? And then when you put that one in front of it, then it becomes glorious. And the one we put in front of it are these two processes that we do simultaneously, which means basically the nine processes of devotional service according to the rules and regulations, but with a view to entering into Vrindavan and for a view to attaining Parama Bhakti Bhava and Bhagavad Anubhava. Not just for a view to gain knowledge or a view to become powerful or a view to become opulent in this world. So, any further comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
In the beginning of your class, you explained that Narada Muni gives Krishna to qualified people.
Yes.
But it seems that with a hunter, it's not the case because he keep almost animals, were very very the name is, you see what I mean? So can you explain?
Yes. He gives the process differently to different people according to their qualification. So to these expert performers of Varnashram, he gave them Sankhya and Yoga. He gave them mystic yoga, and he gave them studying the Shastras for philosophy. He did not give that to McGrory. Narada did not say to McGrory, go study the Upanishads and do pranayam and do asanas. And he didn't give him that process. He wasn't qualified to do it. He gave him another process. So that's why C. Prabhupada in this purport is saying, he says, Narada Muni gave that process to those people, and the process we're giving to us is Pancharatriki Vidhi and Bhagavad Vidhi. Yes?
You're mentioning that each one of us has got a particular talent which we can...
Yes, that's what Prabhupada says.
So now my question is, how do we find that particular talent which we have?
Yes, Prabhupada says, Krishna has given everyone something extraordinary, and to use one's extraordinary talent for Krishna means successful life. Well, I basically, there's two ways that I can think of. One is you think a little bit about what activities have made you feel alive and energized. So I recently met one devotee in his 50s who said that now he's finding the service that makes him feel completely fulfilled. So it's a shame that he hasn't found it until his 50s, but better late than never. So, and think about that in terms of the details, the components of it, not the whole thing. You know, if you find, well, planning the Rath Yatra Festival was the time I felt the most enlivened, and the time I just felt like I could work for 16 hours a day without getting tired, and, you know, that kind of thing, where you're working on something, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh my God, it's 9 o'clock at night, and you stop working it, and then you feel tired? Yes? That while you're engaged in that activity, you don't even notice anything. You don't notice it's time for prasadam, you don't notice it's time to go to sleep, you don't notice anything. And then when you stop, you go, oh, I need to go to sleep. And so I think of it like Ayurveda. Like in Ayurveda, there's different kinds of food for different kinds of people. Modern medicine is there's one diet for everybody, and there's one normal for everybody. There's one height-weight chart for everybody. But according to Ayurveda, there's different kinds of food for different people. So that's true psychologically. So think about, what activity have I done? What kinds of activities have I done where I felt fully alive and fully fulfilled? And then don't just look at the package. Like if you felt really fulfilled planning a Rath Yatra, then it's not like, oh, my talent is planning Rath Yatras. But what are the components of it? Did you really like working with governments? Did you really like collecting funds? Did you really like organizing the devotees? Did you really like building the car? Did you like building things? What parts of it did you like? And then you can isolate those and put them together. Like for myself, I've realized I really like doing things that help other people, and I really like doing things that involved research and intellectual puzzles. I don't like mathematical puzzles, but I like intellectual and logical puzzles. And I really like things that involve some creative work. So I've been able to isolate certain components. So the sort of things you can look at is, do I like doing tasks, or do I like better being with people? Do I like working alone? Do I like working with a team? Do I like... Or maybe some, a little of both. Maybe I like working mostly alone, but I like to meet with the team every once in a while. Do I like being my own boss, or do I like somebody else telling me what to do? How much supervision do I like? Do I like having a lot of supervision? Do I like having somebody that I report to frequently, or do I like a situation where I'm mostly supervising myself? Do I like to do things that have a lot of variety and a lot of changing in them, so that every time I'm doing something it's a little bit different and I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be doing it from one time to another? Or do I like knowing exactly what I'm doing and I do pretty much the same thing every day? And this is the way I do it, and this is when I do it, and this is how I do it. So those are the kind of things you can look at. Do I like things that involve art, things that involve music, things that involve physical activities, things that involve logic, things that involve mathematics, things that involve language. You know, you can see like this. And then, you know, I would first look at any time in your life where you were like, yes, I love this. I just absolutely love this. I don't want to stop. Somebody says, Prabhu, it's time for prasadam. Yeah, I'll be there in a minute. You know, I bought Prabhu, I don't know if there's anything left. You know, what were you doing when that happened, besides sleeping? You know, what kind of activities were you doing when that happened? What kind of activities was like, oh, it's 10 o'clock at night. Oh my God, I'm really tired. You know, and where you were happy and enlivened, and it was easy when you picked up your japa beads, it was easy to go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Krishna. Where everything was, what were you doing? And then break it up and see what components were there. Because you may not be able to just do that specific thing. You understand what I'm saying? And then see, okay, what do I have the talents for? So that's one way to tell, which is a very good way to tell. But there's something else also, and that is we might not have fully experienced something we're good at if we haven't had proper training in that thing. So this I discovered in my own life, that when I was first asked to take care of children, I was given no training whatsoever. Just, here are the children, their mothers are busy doing something important. Take care of them so the mothers can do something important. Here they are, goodbye. So I didn't enjoy it very much. First of all, I didn't enjoy it very much because of the attitude around it. You know, we're going to give you the useless thing to do so other people can do something important. So that, it just wasn't very enlivening. And then I wasn't given any facility. I wasn't given a room to watch them in. I wasn't given any things for them to be busy with. I wasn't given any instruction how to take care of them. And I was bored. I was just really bored. What am I going to do with these kids? Okay, let's go see the cows, kids. Okay, let's, you know. Oh my. And then it was only when I met Jyotir Mayi from France, and she trained me. She said, Urmila, let's start a nursery school. She said, we have children the same age, let's start a nursery school. I said, oh, I don't know if I want to do a nursery school. And she had a wholly different mentality. You know, she said, we're not watching the kids for what the mothers are doing. She said, we don't care what the mothers are doing. Because the temple there had this policy that the only kids who could go to the nursery school were kids whose mothers were doing service at the temple. And she wouldn't do that. She told the temple authorities, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. She was kind of feisty, more than me. And she said, you know, we don't care if the mothers are sleeping. You know, we're doing this for the kids. This is a service for the kids. They're also devotees. So that alone shifted my whole experience. And then she taught me how to do it. Engage them in this activity and this activity and do this with them and that with them. And within a month, I said, I love this. And I mean, definitely one of my happiest times in Krishna consciousness was when I ran a nursery school. I absolutely loved it. And the main thing that I loved about it was that I could just be hearing and chanting about Krishna for the whole time. So don't tell anybody this, that if you really want to be just involved in Krishna Leela, you don't have to go to Radhakund and pay a lot of money and go to the retreats there at Govardhan and Varshana. All you have to do is run a nursery school. But please don't tell anybody this. It's our, because that's all we did. That's all we did. We just did puppet shows of Krishna Leela, and we did color, you know, we colored pictures about Krishna, and we decorated them, and we did little dramas about Krishna, and it was... We read books of Krishna's pastimes, and you know, one of the things that I discovered several things there. I like teaching. I like helping other people become Krishna conscious, and I like anything where I can be absorbed in Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. So those were the three things I discovered from doing a nursery school. Yes.
I was following the question.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, those are the two things I see. Look at what you really made you come alive, and also find opportunities to work with people who can train you in different things, because it could be you have some talent that's hidden that has to come out in the proper circumstance.
I read to ask if she yeah. wrote it at the same time in the beginning.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay, so fine. But once we find that thing and it really feels good and we're quite confident that that's our gift, and we know, then should we go for it no matter what? Because there is also, obviously, there is also needs of the,
okay.
of the circumstance and things. Is it going to work? Say, for example, look at the community and we try really meditate on this and we figure out, okay, like so many things. And is community still going to be functional, or it's going to be
okay. Well, let's look at from the point of view of ourselves and then look at the point of view from management. So for ourselves, Prabhupada says there's emergency, ordinary, and desired work in Bhagavad Gita. So emergency work is, I'm not good at it, I don't like it, but somebody has to do it, and I'll do it. So emergency work should be for emergencies, please. If your life is living in an emergency, you will become exhausted. What I've noticed is emergency work gives you a kind of exuberance. I'm not exactly sure what that comes from. You know, but somehow throwing yourself into an emergency gives some sort of energy, but it depletes you. And if you keep doing that, you feel exhausted and depressed and depleted, and you're dragging yourself around, and you're like, why am I in this Krishna consciousness anyway? And we've seen that with devotees. I mean, I know of one devotee who is not practicing anymore because he was doing emergency work for 15 years. And he said, I don't even know who I am anymore. So definitely for ourselves, we want to be very careful. Now, in ordinary activities are going to be mostly according to our varna and ashrama, which I didn't talk much about varna and ashrama today, although it was in the purport and the verse. So our ordinary activities are going to be by our varna and ashrama, and varna and ashrama means our nature and our propensity and our talent. But of course, our ordinary activities also include things like cleaning. You know, not that well, like these brahmanas in India who won't clean anything. You know, everybody should be contributing to that kind of ordinary thing. Does that make sense to you? You know, you can't say, well, I really love just to make music, so I'm just going to sit in the temple room and make music all day, and I'm never going to do anything to help live. You know, everybody in life has to do ordinary things. You have to bathe. You can't say, well, I'm not going to bathe. I'm just going to, I mean, unless you're like that. Who is that? Vamsi, that follower of Bhaktisiddhanta, who didn't eat, bathe, pass stool, or urine for 4 months. So, you know, if you can do that, then you're exempt from those sort of things. But most of us, we have to do that. We have to wash our clothes. We have to bathe. We have to clean our place. We have to do the ordinary things of life, whatever your talents and propensities are. Now, if that's all you're doing, that's, again, a little bit of a problem. And then there's desired activities, which I see are like materially we'd call them hobbies. So I was just with one devotee in Budapest who's a professor at Bhaktivedanta College there, and definitely her main talent is intellectual. So she's finished her master's, she's getting her PhD, mostly she's teaching Shastra and philosophy and writing, and she loves that. But she says, you know, what I also like to do is sew. She has a Govardhan Shila, and she's making all these intricate turbans for him, and she embroiders clothes for devotees' deities. And she says sometimes it's really nice to not do something intellectual and just do something little creative. So I see that as a desired activity. So for ourselves, our main thing should be our ordinary activities, which should be by our varna and ashram, by our talents, by our propensities. But that also includes just ordinary life. And nobody should say, well, you know, I don't have to do ordinary life things. That's ridiculous. And that should also include some little hobbies that we're doing for Krishna. Please have a hobby for Krishna. And the other thing is that sometimes everybody has to do emergency work sometimes. I don't care if you're a devotee or not a devotee. It's part of being part of a society. But we do have some personal responsibility to make sure. We have some personal responsibility to fly our own plane and be able to say, you know what? I need to do the things that are according to my nature and not let somebody force us into emergency work on a long-term basis. We have to take some personal responsibility for that. And to be able to say, you know, this is not the kind of work I should be doing. That may change also over our lives. So what's appropriate for us as a grihastha is going to be different than what was appropriate as a brahmachari and what's appropriate as a vanaprastha. Now, as far as management always has this perpetual problem, especially since our society is kind of small. We have all these are the things that need to be done, and these are the talents people have in our community, and they don't always fit. So sometimes you have to ask people to do things that are opposite to their talents. That's one problem. A bigger problem I see is that sometimes we can't figure out how to engage people's talents. So, of course, as a manager, sometimes you have to ask people to do things that they're not good at or they don't enjoy. But managers, we should try to think of how people can engage those talents and help people to find ways to engage those talents. And the more that we can match people's talents to the work that needs to be done, guess what? The happier everybody who's working for us is going to be. The more satisfied they're going to be. And then guess what? More and more people will come and see, look how happy and satisfied everybody is. I want to work there too. And then more and more people will come with more and more talents to offer that will do more and more things that need to be done. And it can cycle the other way. If all you ever think about is what needs to be done, if this is the only hand you ever look at, what needs to be done, if you never look at this hand as to what people's talents are, then people are not going to be happy. They won't stay long term. Because Krishna says you're going to do your nature anyway. So they'll find some other way of using their talents that aren't working for the temple, and other people won't be so inclined to come, and then we'll constantly have all this work that needs to be done that there's no one to do. And then we'll constantly think that we have to do that. Whereas if we realize, okay, there's some emergency work, but how can I engage people according to their talents? Then they'll become easier and easier and easier and easier to do that. It will snowball. I was reading in Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second Avenue, like this. So many times in the early days of the movement, we had this mood of engaging people according to their propensities, even though we had far fewer people and far more to be done. And Maharaj was talking about how that when they had that mood, that people would just show up who had the talents that they needed. And I've also experienced this, that if you have some project and you really need something to be done, and you have this mood of wanting to engage people according to their talents, Krishna will send somebody. He'll enliven somebody who has that talent to come and help you out. So that's what I've seen. Yes?
In Bhagavad Gita, one of Arjuna's arguments, I guess we can assume that we all are Varnasankara, since we are not born in Varnashram.
You could say that. Varnasankara can mean several different things. One whose Varna is not known. Yeah. I mean, in the social context, as I'm gearing up to teach sociology of religion on Monday, in the social context in which Arjuna was speaking, Varnasankara meant mostly illegitimate children.
Which we all are.
No, we're certainly not. I'm not an illegitimate child.
Well, of course.
Arjuna meant illegitimate children. He meant children born outside of marriage.
But we're also born outside of any city.
Yes, but again, if you look at social context, that wasn't what Arjuna meant.
Okay.
That wasn't the meaning of it. I mean, if you look at sociologists, they'll tell you that as soon as you get a certain percentage of the population of illegitimate children, the whole social structure crumbles. I believe it's either 17 or 25%, I forget what the number is. But there's a certain number that when you have that number of illegitimate children in society, the social structure crumbles.
But he also wants to create a Varnashram system, and to determine, I mean, sometimes I think about myself.
I don't want it. The problem is that it's 3 minutes to nine, and a discussion on Varnashram to discuss these things. I'm happy to discuss these things, but I intentionally looked at the verse in purport today and said I'm not going to do Varnashram today. I decided that I was going to concentrate on Bhagavad Anubhava. Actually, when I first looked at the verse yesterday, I said I'm going to concentrate on Bhagavad Anubhava and Parma Bhakti Bhava. And then this morning I thought, let me look at what Prabhupada says about Pancharatriki and Bhagavat. And I looked that up and went, wow. So I don't want to focus too much on Varnash. I just can't in the time that I have. So just super, 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 super simple answers is ashram is mostly how old you are. When you're young, you're a student. When you're a kid, you're a student. When you're in youthful life, you're married and you have an occupation. When you're older, you're retired. That's mostly what ashram is about. And some people who are capable of being lifetime renunciates, they go directly from being a student to being retired. They never have a job in the world. Jobs are for grihasthas. Students and retired people don't have jobs, yes? Okay. So that's basically what ashram is about, and ashram takes this natural thing that people go through, that pretty much everybody goes through. You're a student, you have a job and a family, and then you retire. It takes those things and says how to do that in a way that you're connecting it with Krishna. So the ashram mostly works with your level of attachment, detachment, whether you want to work in the world as attached or detached. Okay, then varna is your occupation. Varna is primarily exhibited in what ashram? Grihastha ashram. In fact, only the grihasthas can do the full range of varnas. A sannyasi cannot go out and get a job as a government official. A sannyasi is not supposed to be a king. A sannyasi is not supposed to be a banker, right? I mean, Vanaprastha is retired from work, and the brahmachari doesn't have a job yet. He's a student. So it's only in the grihastha ashram that you have the full range of varnas. Varnas is basically your occupation. It's what you do to earn a living and what you do to contribute to society. So people have occupations, yes. So there's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of occupations. Why take these occupations and put them into four categories and put names on them? And sometimes Prabhupada says you don't need to do that. Sometimes Prabhupada says you don't need to designate yourself as any varna or ashram, just whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna. What's the purpose of doing that? Again, it's so you can see how to sacrifice for Krishna. If I have these kind of occupations, oh, these fit into the Vaishya category. Therefore, I sacrifice for Krishna like that. I have these kind of occupations, oh, that fits into the Brahmin category. Therefore, I can offer to Krishna like that. Because we're supposed to take whatever we do, yakaroshi, yadagnashi, yatahosi, tadatsi, we're supposed to take whatever we do and offer it to Krishna. So how to do that? People ask us all the time. How do I take what I'm doing and offer it to Krishna? I don't know how to do that. I'm working in a clothing store. How do I offer that to Krishna? So the Varna system tells you how to do that. It says, oh, that's in this category, and that's how these people offer it to Krishna. So that's the main benefit. And if you can figure out what's your situation on the attachment-detachment scale, and if you can figure out what's your occupation, then you can pretty much figure out where you fit in that system and how you would offer that to Krishna. I do not expect that we're going to be able to institute the Varnashram system at the present time the way it was instituted thousands and thousands of years ago, at least not in the foreseeable future. Maybe in another 2,000 or 3,000 years, I don't know, but as far as the strict system. But that's a pretty simple explanation of Varnashram. And Varnashram is not necessary for Krishna consciousness. And many of us are hopeless at ever being able to institute Varnashram properly. If you're a, 42-year-old, twice-divorced person, you don't fit anywhere in the Varnashram system. You don't have an ashram.
But to have a nicely functioning ashram.
But anyway, a lot of people don't fit in the Varnashram system. They just don't. I'm sorry, the majority of people don't fit in the Varnashram system. If someone says, I'm 35, I'm divorced, and I'm working a job to maintain my family, my mother and father in India, what are they? Are they a grihastha? No, they don't have a wife. Are they a vanaprastha? No, they have a job and an apartment. What are they? They don't fit anywhere. So that the problem is that a lot of people don't fit anywhere. If somebody comes in the movement and says, I've already had 10 boyfriends and...
But if we want to...
Where do they fit?
But
they don't.
If we want to properly guide our children and situate them as a grihastha in a varnashram system, within a varnashram system.
But to whatever extent we can implement it.
But it's not there, I mean...
Well, we are starting to implement it to some extent. We definitely are. To whatever extent we can. No, we cannot implement it all the way. If we implemented Varnashram all the way, most of the people who get married in ISKCON would not be qualified to get married. Am I correct? I don't know what the percentage, but it's a very high percent of people who enter the Grihastha Ashram in ISKCON would not be qualified to enter the Grihastha Ashram.
No, but they can qualify themselves.
They can't. Not by Varnashram.
Any situation.
Not by Varnashram.
No, by chance.
That's not Varnashram. Then you're looking at something else.
No, but we are going on the two rails.
That's neither of those are Varnashram. Panchatriki Vidhi and Bhagavat Vidhi, neither of those are Varnashram. Varnashram is material. So, as far as possible, as far as could be used in bhakti. Not absolutely, not now. If we,
well, now it's,
you can't.
But as it, I
but you just can't do it. You cannot take the people that are in the Hare Krishna movement and through Varnashram alone. It just isn't going to work.
But what about our children? They're going into Krishna consciousness.
They can do more. They can do better.
And they need.
But they're not going to be able to do it absolutely either. Having raised hundreds of children in Krishna consciousness, I will tell you, they will not be able to do it absolutely either. And it's all right, because it's not, we don't have to do it absolutely.
But isn't that partly because there is no consciousness? Because if there...
Okay, there is somewhat. There is somewhat. We have something. We do have some brahmacharya ashrams. We do have some grihastha ashrams. We do have people acting as brahmanas. We do have people acting as vaishyas. We are doing it somewhat. We cannot do it completely. Maybe some people can do it completely. We might have some people in our Hare Krishna movement who actually can do it completely, but most people can't, and that's okay. Has to be okay. We're not taking in people with that prerequisite. Otherwise, most of us would be finished. Yes? We don't say to people, when we marry people, we don't say, okay, what varna are you? What varna are you? Have you been a perfect brahmachari? Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's ridiculous. In a proper varnashram, you're not going to marry your daughter to somebody who's had 10 girlfriends. I'm sorry.
No.
No, you're not going to do it.
But
nowadays, that's what are we going to do? Otherwise, we're not going to get most of the people in the Hare Krishna movement married. Hello? That's the universe we're living in. I'm sorry. And frankly, that happens to be the universe some of our children are living in, too. We might like to acknowledge that. We might not like to acknowledge that. That's another thing. But even, and I'm not going to say names and places, but even in places where everything is supposed to be very paka, and everybody's supposed to be following everything very perfectly. We won't say where. I mean, some specific places. And everybody's supposed to be exactly very Vedic. This stuff is going on. It is. And I don't think I can take, because people are already wandering off, because the time is gone. So I just, to me, it's very, very simple. For us, ashram means... How old are you? And how detached, attached are you? Simple. Varna is, are you in the grihastha ashram? What's your occupation? How do you make your livelihood? And you look at those things and say, okay, for the situation I'm in, what guidance can I get from the shastra about how I can use my situation in Krishna's service? I see that's the value of varna ashram. It gives you some guidance. How can I offer this to Krishna? How can I? Because that's really all we care about, is how can I offer this to Krishna? We are not using Varnashram to become pious. We're not interested just in becoming pious. We're cleansing our anarchas through bhakti, not through Varnashram. If we think we're cleansing our anarchas through Varnashram, that's karma mizra bhakti at best, or karma kanda at worst. That's not what we're aiming for. But we can use some of the principles of Varnashram to help us in our practical life. How can I engage my propensity and my nature in Krishna's service? Are we going to establish Varnashram the way it was established 10,000 years ago? I don't know. I don't see that. Maybe, but I don't think that's going to happen while I'm in this particular body. And I don't think it's going to happen while my grandchildren are in their body either. And I'm not even sure if that's even wanted or necessary in Kali Yuga. I don't know. Yes?
One point, there was not even an offer to us. Like, for example, sometimes Manusam people is quoted on Varnashram.
Mm.
But according, we are not, in many ways, we don't follow Manusam Hita.
Yes.
Many of our sannyasis we take from Brahmachari to sannyas, according to Manusam Hita, we could not take sannyas.
They have to go through the Grahastasha.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then if we look how it was followed each ashram, we know a little bit what is finding Shastra.
We're not really sure. Yeah, that's another really, really good point, is we really don't know what is Varnashram or what is Vedic. We just really don't know. We have some idea. And what happens often when we try to do it is we're putting on some our own...
But Prabhupada does say
our own.
If Varnashram is restored, human society will not be happy. And if I, as a Grihastha, having, let's say, grown up in the temple and then now living outside and trying to raise a family, you see that as long as you have to intermingle with the gods,
yes,
it's very, very hard to even just have your proper sadhana.
That's true.
So that's why it's so important.
So that's true. So is whatever you can do in the service, whatever we can understand from what we saw Prabhupada do, whatever we can understand, whatever we can institute that's helpful in our bhakti, then we should certainly do that. Undoubtedly. That definitely makes it easier if you can understand, okay, I mean, for me, when I moved from the Grahastha ashram to the Vanaprastha ashram, and that was helpful, looking at things in the Shastra about Vanaprastha, it was helpful for me to understand, okay, how am I supposed to change the way I offer my service to Krishna? How am I supposed to change the way I'm living? But I'm not following everything in the Shastra about Vanaprastha, otherwise I'd have dreadlocks. It's right there in the Bhagavatam. So when I come with dreadlocks tomorrow, you'll know that I'm trying to institute the Varnashram system. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.